Okay. Check. Okay, so thank you, Paulo and Miho. Our next section in the report highlights the environmental benefits of public transit. To present on that issue, we have Sun Young Yang and Manuela Esteva. Sun Young is a senior organizer and researcher at the Labor Community Strategy Center in Los Angeles. She works with the Clean Air Campaign and the Bus Riders Union, and focuses on Koreatown membership development as well. She was born in Korea and has lived on the Northern Mariana Islands, Saipan and Guam, until high school when she came to Los Angeles. Sun Young is fluent in Korean and Spanish. She has a BA from Smith College and has studied biocultural diversity and development in Ecuador, Bolivia, and Peru. Sun Young has also worked with the Indigenous Environmental Network, focusing on climate change research. She is so, so cool. Give it up.
And Manuela is a mother of two girls and a home child care provider. Her political roots began in DF, Mexico, when she got involved in the movements of campesinos. Manuela has been a leader with power for the last 8 years. Manuela was recruited by her sister Gloria and was compelled by Power's politicized childcare program, Power Kids, and the work that we do with youth. Growing up in the highly polluted part of Mexico City, she saw how environmental conditions affected people's health. She came to the US and saw the same issue here and decided something had to be done. So.
Good evening, folks. Can everybody hear? Because I can't really quite. Anyways. So I'm very grateful and honored to be here with Power, our sister organization in the Bay, to talk about environmental justice and climate justice. So I think my purpose here today is to pretty much refute the idea that in order for any kind of environmental benefits to happen, that, you know, poor, working class, Black and Latino, API, indigenous folks, transit system is dispensable, and that the focus should be on choice riders, and that that's the only way to, you know, bring environmental benefits, is a whole false strategy that has been proven to do nothing. In fact, make the conditions worse. So I'm gonna speak into that, as well as mainly talking about that really at the end of the day, transit, it's not about what, but who, for whom we're trying to build for, and that the biggest environmental as well as public health gains comes from focusing on the needs of the poor. So the Bus Riders Union and the Strategy Center, if folks are not familiar, we've been around for the last 20 years doing transit justice and environmental justice work. The Bus Riders Union in Los Angeles actually kicked off in 1994 when we sued the MTA for civil rights. But one of the main motivations of us going into transit justice or starting transit justice work was because of the environment. In Los Angeles, where there's more than 7+ million cars, more cars than actual drivers, we wanted to look at what the hell is going on that most people will have to drive instead of be able to use a much more sustainable public transit system. And at the center of that, what we saw was a corporatized, pro-suburban commuter, pro-big construction projects strategy that the MTA, our own regional transportation planning agency, was putting forth at the expense of putting a 24/7 first-class bus-centered public transportation system that would meet the needs of the most transit-dependent, the disabled, the elderly, the immigrante, you know, the domestica, the security officer, those folks who need public transit the most, their needs secondary to those interests. So in our Clean Air campaign, there's three core framework of what we think is an environmental and transit justice-centered transportation. What the frames would look like. First, that it's centered around meeting the needs of the least mobile, the least resource, transit-dependent communities. most of the time that being low-income, working-class, and people of color communities. Because if you can meet the needs of a, you know, of a Latina domestica going all the way across the county with no car, no park and ride, if you can meet her needs in an efficient and affordable way, you can meet the needs of most everybody who have more resources and privileges. The second is that it must focus on the immediate needs to reduce the public health crisis that's happening because of auto center pollution. If you read the Power document, as well as many other transit justice document, transit justice communities are also the environmental justice communities. Many of the times, it's poor working class people living in the most polluted facilities, as well as live in park, green space poor neighborhoods, live in very congested areas, right? But they're not the ones driving or consuming, you know, exorbitant amounts of oil, right, in this country, yet they're the least contributing to the problem, but the most impacted on a cumulative level, right? So we need to do something about the real public health crisis. And third is addressing the urgency, the real urgency of the climate crisis, where it's not, the strategy is not about, let's, you know, wait 10, 20 years to build an alternative. Maybe those choice riders might get off their fancy cars and get onto an even fancier commuter rail project, right? No, we don't have that luxury either, and that strategy has failed. That's why we're in a worse condition right now, less than 8 years right now, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 50% by 2020. That's what the IPCC is putting out. So if we're serious about that, we can't continue to invest in false solutions, false strategies that focus on commuter choice riders. So our framework and our pushback against the mainstream environmentalists, as well as the many good-intentioned, right, urban planners who actually a lot of times miss the point, is that the biggest environmental gains as well in transportation policy will only be made by focusing on the vision and needs of the transit justice communities who are most inclined to support the most environmentally radical transit demands, such as banning highway expansion and auto use, redirecting resources, massive amounts of resources for mass transit. So here are just some of the immediate policy recommendations that the Bus Riders Union and the Strategy Center has been working on. One is that there's no better effective strategy to increase ridership overall than lowering the cost of transit. And that means agencies right now need to redirect their funds from massive construction projects to operations, maintaining and operating the existing system. LA's biggest ridership was in 1985 when RTD, at the time, implemented 50-cent fares, and we still haven't reached that level, right? So when we talk about, let's continue rewarding and encouraging the people, the transit dependent, who are already benefiting the society, to continue using public transit, we need to reward them, not punish them, by, you know, raising fares, pricing them out of the system, as well as cutting their transit service, like bus services, right, that serve poorer communities, so that big corporate commuter rail projects, as well as big rail boondoggle projects, can be built, and the balance, the budget can be balanced on the backs of the poor. We think the second piece around a specific policy is to restrict auto. The best way to actually cut down auto use is to make it inconvenient. And proposals such as auto-free zones, you know, redirecting, taking right now what the federal government is spending 80% of the funding of transportation into building more highways and roads, taking that funding and flipping that around, right? That's one of the main demands for the Transit Riders Public Transportation Campaign, is to flip the 80-20, right? Unless you make auto use inconvenient and be challenged by bus-only lanes and other transit priority infrastructure that use the same space and take away space from the auto, you're not gonna reduce car use only by building more fancier alternatives. So I just wanna end it with this from my experience as a grassroots organizer in LA, is that transit justice communities have the most political will to fight for radical greenhouse gas emissions reductions because they're on the front lines of the climate and public health crises. Many, you know, of us who are also immigrantes, you know, we also have an easier time connecting with the bigger picture around global warming and the impacts of climate change as it hits our homelands in the third world, as well as from Hurricane Katrina and many of the pretty racist reactions that this government has towards dealing with black folks in New Orleans, right, during Hurricane Katrina, that we also understand that we're on the front lines of climate disasters. But beyond that, you cannot have a successful environmentally friendly or environmentally beneficial transit system if you're excluding and pricing out the very people who are using it. That's a total contradiction. And so environmentalism in transportation also must focus on the working class and the people of color. Thank you.
Hola, ¿ya? ¿Se oye? Ok. Pues buenas tardes, mi nombre es Manuela y yo voy a hablar un poquito sobre el impacto de la crisis ambiental en las comunidades más pobres del mundo y de San Francisco.
Good evening, my name is Manuela Esteva, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the environmental crisis in low-income communities in San Francisco and in the world.
Y como ya lo estaba diciendo la compañera, la crisis ambiental por los gases tóxicos es uno de las razones por las cuales estamos viviendo en la actualidad y estamos siendo testigos de grandes acontecimientos naturales, bueno, sobrenaturales ya podría decirse ahorita, de huracanes y sequías, de hielo, un montón de cosas que están sucediendo a nivel ambiental que en otros tiempos no sucederían si no tuviéramos tanta emisión de gases tóxicos en el ambiente.
And what we're living through right now is through an economic crisis, through an environmental crisis rather, that's caused by the emission of greenhouse gases that's creating a lot of natural disasters, and what I want to say is also supernatural disasters, things that we've never seen or experienced before, such as hurricanes and droughts that are happening at unprecedented levels.
Y lo que podemos ver es que los países que están siendo más afectados son donde más se está concentrando la gente de color y gente pobre. Y pues prácticamente estos son los que están recibiendo el impacto, ¿verdad?, de estas crisis que están sucediendo a nivel global. Y estamos en un país que es el 5% de la población mundial y somos los responsables del 20% de la contaminación mundial. Entonces,
And as we know, the people that are being most impacted by these natural disasters are people that live in poverty, in communities of color, and in places where there are more people of color living. We know that in the United States, we represent 5% of the population, but we contaminate at a rate of 25%.
El impacto que tenemos en la gente pobre, por ejemplo, con los huracanes, el más reciente que fue el huracán Sandy, tenemos que gente está sufriendo pérdidas de sus pocas cosas que tiene. Me fue muy doloroso encontrar ahorita en una reunión a una compañera de una organización líder que ha perdido todo en su hogar. Esta compañera vive en Nueva York, ahorita está sin casa. Los niveles de agua en su domicilio, en su casa, llegaron, y en toda la población donde ella vivía, llegaron a más de 1.5 metros, cosa que es exageradamente impactante, y todo esto se debe a los científicos lo han dicho, a la emisión de gases tóxicos. En nuestro planeta ya no puede soportar más contaminación.
you know, I recall the most recent hurricane that we've heard about is Hurricane Sandy. There were a lot of people who lost all of their things, all of their material possessions. I was able to meet a woman from an organization on the East Coast, a leader of that organization, who talked to us about how she lost everything, not only in her home, but how everyone in her neighborhood also lost everything that they had, and that the water level in her house reached a meter and a half. I don't know what that translates to. 4.5 feet, something like that. And so we have greenhouse gases to blame for all of these environmental disasters.
Entonces, también a nivel de nuestra membresía, aquí en San Francisco, compañeras de nuestra organización han manifestado su sufrimiento de estar viviendo, tener la necesidad de vivir en zonas altamente peligrosas para la salud, como son el área de Excelsior. Esta compañera, Delia, vive en una casa ubicada en el distrito de Excelsior, y ella tiene que estar en medio de dos freeways, el 101 y el 280, donde pasan cantidad inmensa de automóviles y dejan su humo contaminante. Sus casas están en esa área, están repletas todas las ventanas de humo negro, y por supuesto que sus hijos y ellos mismos lo están respirando. Tiene dos niños con asma y tres sobrinos que ahí viven en esa misma casa, que también tienen asma. Es increíble ver que en una sola familia hay tantas personas con asma, sin contar que yo misma también tengo asma. Y pues todo eso, yo no me atrevo a preguntarle, porque aquí van a salir como muchísima gente que tiene ese problema y tal vez no lo saben, pero lo que queremos
And even in our membership in San Francisco, we have members that are also suffering, that their health is being impacted because they're forced to live in neighborhoods that are more toxic than other neighborhoods. For example, one of our members, her name is Delia, and she lives in the Excelsior, and she lives near two freeways, the 101 and the 280. And the cars contaminate the area. If you look at the windows in her home, they're covered in like black soot. And her two kids and three nephews have asthma. And it's incredible for me to think about, you know, the impact that's having on their entire family. And I also have asthma too. And I don't even want to ask in this room, you know, are people here have asthma, or are they even aware what's causing that health problem?
Y lo que podemos